talk to me. Oh my god. I let you in.
Have you seen the group chat? You're doing it again tonight.
No.
Please. It's my mum's Remembrance Day. I just want to forget about it.
Who's up?
I'll do it.
Cannot go for more than 90 seconds. Am I clear?
What happens after 90 seconds?
Don't want to stay. Light the candle to open the door. Blow it out to close it. Put your hand on it. Now say, talk to me.
Talk to me.
What did the hand feel like?
Felt amazing. I could see and feel everything on the other side. So my mom, she was trying to reach out. Mom, I'm here. Still been seeing stuff.
You mean saying stuff?
What if we opened the door but we didn't shut it?
Oh my god, they followed us!
I like him.
They're not gonna stop. They're never gonna stop!
They like you. Talk to me.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Bela Lugosi's Undead. I'm AJ.
And I'm Suki Ryan.
And we are talking about what is low-key one of the horror sensations of 2023, which is Talk to Me, a new film from A24. We just did our A24 draft. Mm-hmm. I spoke very highly of the movie in our little intro into that episode, if you didn't hear it. And if you didn't hear it, what are you waiting for? Go back and definitely check that one out.
Yep.
But Ryan, what were your initial thoughts on Talk to Me? Because this is going to be more of a New Blood episode. We're going to be kind of off the cuff, not as structured as we normally are. So,
yeah. So, I guess like the big thing is I went in with really high expectations because people are like, it's literally so terrifying. And it's, you know, like I was listening to one of my horror podcasts and they were like, the scariest movie of all time. And so I went in.
Yeah,
like,
that was an unfair. That was an unfair thing to put on this movie. I'm not wrong.
Right. So I mean, it was legitimately good. I think if I went in blind, I would have had a better time with it. I think it's good. I just also, I'm not huge on like coming of age movies in general, in like teenagers being teenager movies. Like, it's just not my thing.
That's so,
but I liked it. I thought that the special effects were cool. I mean, are we allowed to talk about like things that happened in the movie?
Well, let's go ahead and knock out our quick 60-second plot description, and then
there you go.
We can you do knock it out. Yeah, go ahead and toss it over to me.
All right,
whenever you're ready to time.
Let me get my timer ready, set, go.
Okay, so at a party at a random Australian house, a guy is looking for his brother. He can't find him until he looks in the back of the house, and he's like, his brother is like talking to weird shit that doesn't seem to be there. His brother then comes out and stabs him in the chest and then stabs himself in the eye. So we cut to a couple weeks later, a girl named Mia is really struggling because her mom has been dead. And it's coming up on the 2-year anniversary of that death. And so she's trying to hang out with her best friend. Her best friend's name is Jade. Jade has a little brother named Riley, and they all kind of just hang out together and are super chill. There's something really interesting about the race between all of them, Mia being black and then everybody else not being black, but we'll get to that later. And they all see that there's this trend going around of people going to a party and seemingly getting possessed. It's all being filmed on social media. And so they go to one of the parties. Mia does it, and she sees a being on the other side. And when she does, it really starts to freak her out. But also it gives her a euphoric high. So her and the kids keep redoing it over and over and over again until eventually when Jade is out of the room, Riley does it. But when he does it, he connects 15. With Mia's mother. And Mia's mother talks to her. And they basically...
10 seconds.
Everything gets crazy out of control. And the kids can't control it anymore. And it gets nuts. And I forgot to mention during this whole time that... The way that the way that the people are able to talk to the ghosts is via holding a hand and saying, talk to me. It's right. Like a embalmed hand of somebody that was like a psychic.
Yep. We're a little rusty on the 90 seconds. We haven't done it in a while. So
I think you only gave me 60 seconds. I think that didn't help.
Yeah.
I think I said 60 seconds.
You said 60. I gave you 90.
Okay. Oh, well, that's
normally the 90. So, yeah, that's pretty good though. I mean, I think you did a good job there. I just want to question maybe if there's anyone from Australia listening. Are kangaroos legitimately as much of a nuisance as like deer in Australia? Is that a thing that happens?
That is actually for sure a thing that happens. I know that for a fact. Wow. that is a big issue in Australia. Wow. That kangaroos do get hit by cars fairly often.
Wow, that's so interesting. Yeah, because I was like, in America, that would have been a deer. And in Australia, it's like, we have kangaroo.
Yeah, so I think that's a big part of this movie that we should address, is that it is not coming from an American perspective.
Yeah.
It's very much coming from a Australian perspective. The Philippous, Danny and Michael, who are the directors of this film, are two YouTube stars. Their channel, Raka Raka, is actually super popular. I think at one point in time they had over 1 million subscribers. And they currently have 6.5 million subscribers. So
what's their thing? What does Raka Raka do?
Their whole thing is that they make crazy action mashups. So for example, they have Ronald McDonald Chicken Store Massacre as an episode of their show that has 65 million views.
Jesus.
And it was 3.5 minutes long. Or they have Ronald McDonald's Tastes Burger King. So one of them dressed up as Ronald McDonald and went to Burger King. But so their action stuff is nuts. And that's kind of how they start to make a name for themselves, is they would do all of the stunts themselves. And it was kind of dangerous, but they kind of were appealing to a very specific demographic on YouTube.
Yeah.
However, this is not that demographic at all. This is a full-blown horror movie. An extremely polished movie at that.
Yeah, but absolutely.
Yeah, I would say this is definitely very different than the vibe that they've cultivated on their channel. Yes, there's some of that scumbumminess that teens have that breaks through. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I would say that they just really had a fun time making something scary. And you can tell.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it was a really good movie. I think there were some really terrifying parts. I can't wait to go through the awards because I don't want to talk about anything that happens in the movie too early in the podcast. So
so before we get into that part, then, what did you think of the performances? Was there anybody that stood out to you?
Yeah, I mean, the main character is amazing. I even thought all of the main crew were really good when it came to, I don't know any of the characters' names at this point, but the main character, the sister, right? Yep. I thought that she did a really great job. I'm trying to think. And I don't know. I think the boyfriend was okay.
So Sophie Wilde is Mia, who's the main actress in the film.
Yeah. She did fantastic. Yes. Obviously, she carried most of the movie just by herself in most scenes.
I would agree with that.
Yeah.
And then you have Alexandra Jensen as Jade, who's the best friend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You have Joe Bird as Riley the boy, which what happens to him is so disgusting and messed up. And then you've got Haley is one of the other people who they hang out with, is played by Zoe Terekes. So I believe they are non-binary actor. Yeah, they are. So I thought they were one of the people that I really intriguing as an on-screen character.
Yeah, absolutely. Sort of this little side character that was pretty cool. There's a book I'm reading at the moment of I forget what it's called, Looped, and they kind of have a similar vibe to some of the characters in that book too as well. I'm trying to look through the actors here, but I mean, Mia was amazing. Riley wasn't in it very long.
Yeah, so I think we can't really go too deep into this without discussing some of the spoilers, but I will say the big thing I want to discuss before we get into full-blown spoiler territory is the actual creature design. Because I thought that was extremely unnerving. I think the makeup effects are incredible. So just so the audience knows, when they say talk to me, they physically see a mutilated or dead body like in front of them. Think of it like American Werewolf in London. And the and the being is just standing there, not doing anything. It's just kind of like existing in their eyesight. And if they let go of the hand at this point and blow out the candle, then it goes away, no issues. But if they then say, let me in, the creature or being possesses them, possesses their body and like causes the actor to like throw their head back. Their eyes go black. And that's where you see like all the creepy stuff in the trailer is when that occurs. Right. I thought one, the makeup effects on that actual transformation of the actor turning into like the possessed person was incredible. I thought that was so scary and upsetting. I think that the way they then use it later in the film, after you get used to how scary it feels, to then homage, to have it look like Requiem for a Dream, where it's a bunch of kids essentially getting high on the sensation of being possessed. I think as a drug allegory, this movie really works.
Yeah.
As like people trying to use drugs to get over grief. And I think that's really where my like connection to this movie comes in, is I thought that it handled that idea so well. And the lengths you're willing to go to chase that next high, to chase the feeling of trying to like be with somebody who you miss, that's where it resonated with me.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Definitely good drug allegory. I think like the piece that was interesting though is like they touched on the allegory, but I don't think they dug into it. Obviously for narrative reasons, right? So you didn't get to see like the demise of any, you know, anyone because of the drugs. I guess you kind of did with Mia, right? In that sort of way, but everyone else kind of got off and scot-free. Yes, Riley got kind of hurt in that sort of way, I guess, right? But one thing that was interesting with the non-binary trans actors in horror is I think it's so interesting that horror has always been sort of pushing the envelope on like social norms and things like that. Because are there a lot of other movies? You watch a lot more movies than horror. Are there a lot of movies that are casting people within that community? I don't know the answer to that. I'm wondering what your take on that is.
I mean, it's hit and miss, right? You have shows like Pose on Television that definitely provided the largest platform for trans and non-binary performers. Sure. And that show helped launch MJ Rodriguez to be very popular. So they are extremely present in other films, like to the point where I believe MJ Rodriguez was one of the voices of the new Transformers. So they're becoming I think the use of trans actors is becoming more interesting in drama specifically.
Yeah,
but I still don't think we're quite there yet. Where
the cool thing I like about the trans actors, the non-binary trans actors in horror, is this character of Haley and the character from Evil Dead Rises. It like they were just people in the movie, right? And of course, there's a place, especially in dramas, where their identity is important to the plot and talking about through those things. But like the cool thing about these two different actors is that in these movies, right, they're just people living their lives. Like it's implied inherently that they are non-binary and trans, and yet it's not like, oh, they have to talk about it, or it has to be like, and I'm not saying that they shouldn't. It's just that, you know, people just want to be living. It's almost like they like move to a progressive world in which they're just accepted as they are in these like movies.
I would agree with that.
Like,
yes. Especially because I would argue that the ringleader of the popular teen kids in this particular film is the non-binary actor, right? They are the most popular character on screen.
Yeah.
So that's an interesting difference then. And again, like you said, it's not even brought up. It's not even a plot point. And I think that it's really well made and and very progressive that he just pushed that in there. There's like, this is the right person for this role. This person owns this role 100%. Like, is one of the most memorable characters in the entire movie. And on top of that, it just is.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. And I agree with you. It's the same thing in Evil Dead. The issue that horror does have, though, is its legacy of
butchering
and killing characters like that.
or making it like the drop point of the jump scare at the end of the movie in Sleepaway Camp, right? Like,
yes, right. So horror has its very own complicated history to reckon with. Mm-hmm. I mean, nothing will ever have as complicated history as Sleepaway Camp, or in my opinion, the number two movie in terms of like just like really gross, hard to swallow trans representation at this point is Ace Ventura: Pet Detective, which has the most upsetting version of that.
Oh no! Yeah, yeah, we've grown as a society, so that's good. Like,
but at the same time, like I think that something like Talk to Me being able to have that in the film, while also having this drug allegory circling around, also having the performative nature of trying to be popular on social media to your friend circle,
right?
While also at the same time broadcasting to millions, you know, the prevalence of drug use in younger generations is very much a key factor here, but so is isolation. I think there's a lot going on, Talk to Me, that's going to make it really good for rewatch value.
Yeah.
And when you see some of the people behind the scenes, you can kind of feel that. Because, for example, like the person who is the producer on the film is Samantha Jennings, who is one of the people who helped shepherd the Babadook into the popular consciousness. So clearly this is something that she is looking at and trying to find stories that handle grief and trauma through a horror lens.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that it's interesting having a, you know, a YouTube sensation be a director of a teen movie, right? Because I think the problem with like teen movies generally is that it's like, obviously the older generation, you know what I mean? Like creating.
No, 100%. The narrative. Even something, like Mean Girls, for as good as it is, is Tina Fey writing a high school
about story. Her her high school experience, which like so
in 2004 I'm not sure she was able to tap into something that became a cultural moment, but I would not necessarily argue that that was how kids that I went to high school with acted, unless they were directly parroting Mean Girls like visuals.
I think bullying started to look different now. It's like it's a lot more different than it used to be. So it's interesting that they did this. I don't know how accurate of a representation. I just feel like when it comes to horror, it goes back to that, like when they do like teen horrors, it goes back to that thing that horror movies are for teenagers, and it always puts me a little bit. And I think that's what hit me on this one, was that like, oh, it's just another teen horror. Like, I'm like nervous we're gonna go back to that, you know what I mean? So
I see, I don't
know
what you're saying. Yeah, I see what you're saying. I also question what they're going to do with. I mean, obviously, there's a potential for sequels before we get into spoilers. And I think the way the movie ends is extremely interesting in that regard.
Mm-hmm.
But I kind of don't want them, because I can see how this could get wildly out of control and not work.
I agree. I think
and A24 doesn't traditionally push through sequels, right? Pearl and X, I believe, are the exception.
Well, yeah, that's because they had like a vision for it. But yeah, I'm wondering, does A24 have any sequels, really?
I mean, not really. Yeah, well, most of their films are like small dramas, so they're not necessarily something you would need to revisit. The other one that comes to mind is the Souvenir series, which kind of touches on some horror elements in the very last one. But the first two are not horrors. They're just intense dramas.
Right.
So it's something they're willing to do. I don't know if the Philippous are going to return, even though they created this franchise. I don't think they're necessarily wanting to make more of them. And while I'm saying it's somewhat of a sensation, I'm saying that because it made like twice as much.
Yeah. Then they
its opening weekend than they expected.
Wow.
Yeah. Like, it was supposed to make like $4 million and it made 10 in its opening weekend. Oof.
Wow.
So like literally double. It was the best start for an A24 film since Midsommar.
Yeah. Wow. That's crazy. It's so sad that like Hereditary, well, I guess, you know, with inflation and all that type of stuff, but it kind of was like at the beginning of A24, and then everyone went to see Midsommar basically because of Hereditary.
Yeah, well, I think Hereditary is still the highest grossing A24 film until I believe Everything Everywhere All at Once last year.
That makes sense. Yeah,
but other than that, they don't normally, their movies are cheap and they make a lot of money, and right now we're looking at a $4.5 million budget for Talk to Me, and $19 million in profit as of today. That's today's Saturday and the second weekend.
It's interesting.
So,
well, it's interesting that they like, I'm just wondering about horror globally, right? Because the gross worldwide didn't even come close to the US Canada market, right? And it's a foreign film, right? I'm wondering what, I don't know the analysis on that generally, but what does that look like from like foreign films? Do they generally do better globally or no?
It depends on the film. By the way, I've already seen that, I guess, yesterday or 2 days ago, they announced that they already shot a prequel movie to Talk to Me.
Oh, so a prequel. I'll take a prequel better than a sequel.
I was wrong. Apparently, they already made one.
Okay.
It's entirely told through the perspective of mobile phones and social media. Interesting.
Okay. We'll see what that looks.
And it'll be about Duckett, the first guy who stabs himself in the eye at the beginning of this movie.
I'm more interested in that than a sequel, right?
I agree.
So I'd like to learn more about this hand and all of these things. That would be more interesting than more people talking to ghosts and getting killed. And
well, I assume there's going to be more talking to ghosts if it's just the person directly before them.
right. But like, I mean, like, instead of just more of the same, like, I think it could give us maybe more information about what's going on from a prequel standpoint.
From a
sequel standpoint, right?
No, that is a good point. All right,
because you're closer to the origins.
That's true. And also, I can imagine if it was shot entirely through like iPhones, it might actually be cheaper somehow.
Yeah, that's interesting. I wonder how that's going to go. We'll see.
We'll get to that later when we get to the actual spoiler section of this movie. So let's just jump into that now. So okay. I think that the really interesting thing about this film was the choice to one, have Riley be the one who gets super possessed. They don't blow out the candle in time. He smashes his face into the counter or into the desk, which is like gnarly as hell.
Yeah, that
is disgusting.
That's gonna win some awards from us for sure. That whole sequence.
And then to have him come back and do it again later when he's taking a shower.
Right.
Like it is just so disgusting.
Right.
I would argue that it's like some of the most disturbing imagery I've seen in a horror movie since, God, I'm trying to think of a good equivalent. It feels like a scene out of Evil Dead, if I'm being honest.
Sure. Yeah. The eye, when he's taking his eye out of his head.
Yep.
It's so fucked up. That is like the most fucked up. In that part of the movie, I was like, dude, this is fucking sick. Like,
And so, yes, I think that like from that moment on, the movie to me gets on rails. And while it gives us a moment for an emotional catharsis with her dad, and then you find out that it's like not actually her dad for that. Mm-hmm. I was like, there's no way anybody can come back from this, like emotionally after the things the dad says to her.
Yeah.
So what I think is extremely interesting is when we get the 1 second brief look into the other world where Riley's being tortured.
Yes.
So when I saw this movie, it was at South by Southwest and the Philippous were there. Like the filmmakers were there and Sophie Wilde, Mia was there.
Wow. And that's awesome.
Yeah. And so they did a quick Q&A after the movie and they said they shot significantly more footage about that section of the movie. Wow. And then when they looked at it in the cut, there's like, we don't really need it.
Yeah.
So there's like a legitimately like 4 or 5 minute section of that movie that is just us watching Riley be tortured in the like other world.
Holy fuck.
In like How much more do you need? Like orgy scene. And there's only like 90 seconds of it in the movie.
Yeah.
So they apparently shot like much more footage of that and they just cut it all out. They said, this is good. This was enough.
This is enough.
I think that's another good point about them being like interesting directors moving forward is that they have an idea of when what they shot is over the top or too much and they cut it out and then make it a leaner, tighter, nastier movie as a result, I think.
Because
we had just enough to really like feel the stakes of what's going on.
Right. Especially for people that are like YouTubers, right? You'd think like, and more intense, more extreme would be their way of going about it. That's really good ability to taper that back a little bit.
Yeah, I would agree. Especially when you see like their other videos that are like 9-10 minute, just like insane sequences for them to just be like, you know what? A few minutes is good enough.
Sure. So I wonder if it was them or the studios that was tapering them.
Yeah, I mean, so here's the thing is they didn't have A24 as a backer until Sundance. So they brought the movie to Sundance with it unsold. They sold it at Sundance to A24.
Wow. So good for them.
Yep. That's awesome. Yeah, no, I mean, and they apparently at some point in time in the process, I was listening to the Big Picture podcast where they did an interview, if you want more from directly them. Mm-hmm. And they were saying that they had it set up with a studio, and the studio was like, well, you got to cut this, this, and this, and this, and this. Mm-hmm. And they're like, not really. That's like not the story.
Sure.
And they were like, yeah, that would have been too mainstream and not what we were looking for.
Oh, good for them.
And again, so the reason they know the person from who shepherded them through the whole process was that they worked on the Babadook as crew members. Because of that, they saw what it means to take an indie horror film and push through and make it your own vision, even if it doesn't work with the studio, and then seeing that resonate with other people. And I think that's where we're at with this one.
No, absolutely. I easily could have seen, I mean, we'll talk a little bit later about movies we've seen, but the new Insidious movie, I easily could have seen this becoming that, right? Mm-hmm. Where, like, instead of him just slamming his head multiple times and freaking out and trying to stop him and him ripping his eye out and shit like that, like, he could have just, like, slammed it once and then they restrained him, and it would have had a totally different impact. And it would have made it PG-13, right? You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, so I was like an interesting choice, because, like, I do agree that, like, you know, I do think there's certain scenes that if you take out of that movie, change the entire feeling of the movie, really, right?
Yeah, I would agree with that 100%. He also has all those sequences that are just, like, upsetting beyond all reason.
Sure.
And she's getting into fights with her sister, or right. No, this is with her friend. And then she sucks her friends,
oh, the toes.
Boyfriend's toes.
Yeah.
Another, like, and then all of this time, the Mia character is starting to have these weird visions and seeing creatures come around her and freak her out. And those scenes are, I think, are creepy as hell.
Yeah.
That's where I was like, this is, there's a lot of, like, almost like Suspiria
in
this movie, where, that's like, cool. Especially at one point when Riley's asleep and you see the creature come out and, like, rub his face before he gets possessed. That was one that I was like, this is straight up out of Suspiria. I didn't even have a question of that. But and then eventually she's so possessed and upset, she thinks the only way to get Riley through it is to kill him.
Mm-hmm.
And so she has to try to fool everybody to believe that she needs help at her house, gets Riley in a wheelchair, gets ready to go push him into the street, like into the highway. And instead throws herself into the street and she dies.
Yeah, I mean, that whole drug allegory with Mia works really, really well.
Yes.
Right? Like, the destruction of everything around her to alleviate this feeling of grief, to talk to her mother. The big question is, was her mother really her mother, or was it the demons trying to trick her?
I think it could have been both, if I'm being honest. Sure. I think that her mother appears to her at one point later in the film. I think that was real.
Yeah.
But I think the first time that she's trying to talk to her mother, that it was not actually her.
Yeah.
Like, I think that the creatures knew that she could be manipulated in a way.
Yeah. There's all these interesting things that could be talked about with this. There's more to explore within this story, right?
Yeah. I think that the benefit of this film is going to be watching it over and over again.
Yeah.
Like a sick person that I am. Where I think that this is one that I cannot wait to buy on physical media so I can listen to a commentary track and hear this cast talk about this movie, because I feel like there's so much subtlety in the and nuance that is present in it that I'm just not picking up on yet, because it's still in theaters and I've seen it twice and I just want to see it more. I just want to see the movie so much more.
Right. Absolutely.
So the finale, full blown spoilers at the end. Okay. The finale is she's kind of walking through the hospital and then she gets sucked away. And all of a sudden she's at, like, another party and somebody is staring at her while holding the other hand. Because remember, there are two arms that were, like, chopped off. So they're holding the other hand. If you check it, it's like the other, instead of, like, the right hand, it's like the left hand.
Oh, that's interesting.
And then he says, "Let me in."
Yeah.
So the last line of the movie makes it appear as if Mia is now one of the ghost creatures that is connected to the hand.
Yeah. Dude, that's pretty interesting.
Like, I think there's, at first I was like kind of disoriented, and then when I heard the line, I was like, oh shit.
Yeah. So it's the other hand, like the, yes, the thumb is on the other side and stuff. Yes. That's interesting. Yep.
Yeah, because every time that we see it, I believe we're seeing the right hand upright, and if you see it the other side, it's the left hand.
Oh, fascinating.
But so, I mean, they kind of hint at it at one point during the movie, that they say like, I wonder where the other hand is, and apparently it's in like Greece. Mexico or Greece or something. Like, it's in another country.
The only reason I say Greece is because IMDb, they're like, Greece speaker is like the name of the character.
Okay, well, there you go. That's in Greece.
So that's interesting. Yep. Yeah. They're going to have more sequels than just like his foot, his dick. Like, oh, come to me.
That's hilarious. Yeah. I'm fairly certain it was a woman that was the
But I don't know how you would I don't want to dig further into that. Yeah, okay.
Literally. All right, so let's go ahead and wrap this one up. Ryan, what are you scoring? Talk to me on a scale of 1 to 10.
Yeah, I think it was I think it's a solid movie. I'd give it a 7 out of 10.
Okay, fair enough. I am higher on it than you, sure, but I still give it an 8 out of 10.
Sure.
So I think it's one that has the ability to go up to a 9 out of 10,
sure,
with rewatch, but at the moment, I'm not willing to necessarily go that far with it.
Right. So I guess the main thing for me is just the preservation of the horror genre, and I'm just constantly so scared we're going to go back to, like, appealing to teenagers and, like, you know, wanting to, like, I don't know, have multiple sequels of movies of teen things. And I think that really stopped me from enjoying it fully. It's
quick counter on that, though, is that I think what's interesting about focusing on teen dramas is more that teens are less responsible just naturally.
Yeah, true.
And so because they have that invincibility complex about them, that makes more sense logically that they do the things that they do.
It does.
So that's why I think and also because teens are trying to rebel and be countercultural, they fit in naturally into the counterculture idea of horror anyway, because something's not horrific if it's not actively pushing upon taboos or the abnormal. So
I agree.
That's why I think that it's okay that there's teen horror movies. Yeah. It should always be.
No, so, I agree.
I agree with you about your fear, though, because
when we go back
post
to, like,
Scream.
Scream and forgetting what's it? I Know What You Did Last Summer. And
it's a post-Scream issue where the movies that followed Scream were not as good.
Yeah.
And I mean, some of them were. Like, I Know What You Did Last Summer well enough.
Sure.
It's not a masterpiece by any stretch of the imagination.
Sure.
But it is an interesting idea and has its moments. But at the same time, I agree with you that, like, it can get really bad really quickly. That's how the early 2000s.
Right.
Like, struggle for even mediocre movies.
And we've kind of talked about it a little bit, that I wonder if that's still going to happen, because you can make a movie. Like, they went in with no one backing them, right? They made a movie and they're like, we could find someone to take it to put it on streaming. Do you know what I mean? So I'm wondering if it's actually going to happen. Whereas, like, before, you kind of needed a backer to make the movie. So the studios had a lot of power, right, in what was made and what wasn't made. And now, you know, distribution is down to digital, right? Like, with streaming. Mm-hmm. So the distribution, you don't have to create like a thing that can get on a projector, right? Like,
okay, so this is a great segue into what we need to talk about anyway, which is what we've been watching recently, other stuff.
Yeah.
Because while we'll do a New Blood every once in a while about one of these bigger movies, Ryan and I also watch a lot of other random horror stuff throughout the week and, you know, between episodes.
Yep.
And I've been covering a small film festival, Fantasia Fest 2023. Nice. And Ryan's been watching and catching up on a bunch of stuff. So we'll start with you, Ryan. Go ahead and tell us something that you've been watching that is interesting to you.
Yeah, I've just kind of been like digging through Shudder. I couldn't get through Children of the Corn, the Shudder one. Did you see it, AJ?
I have not seen it.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, it's I align with the political leaning, but it's clearly just all political, like, stuff, right? And just like, dude, I just want to watch children like fuck people up, like, you know what I mean? So I wouldn't suggest that one, but I'm watching, like, it's on pause right now because up until the last second before we recorded, I was watching The Watcher on Netflix. Mm-hmm. And it looks really interesting. The fact that it's based on a true story, like, is kind of cool. So it's not going to get, like, too wacky and crazy, like, you know. So it's like, it kind of, knowing it's a true story means that it's human in nature. So mm-hmm. therefore it takes out this, there's all these, like, things that could be seen as supernatural, but they're like, no, it's not supernatural. It's something fucking insidious and human, which, like, keeps you grounded in trying to figure out who did what, instead of having you so scared that, like, it's like ghosts or something like that. You know what I mean? Which is, like, an interesting way to create those movies. And then, of course, I watched Talk to Me and then the new Insidious movie, and the new Insidious movie was just not good.
So, I have not seen the new Insidious movie.
Sure.
So I have no comment on that. Yeah. I'm very curious to see. We're going to have to check in with you again in a couple weeks after you finish The Watcher. Because I've seen the end of it. So I'm very interested to see how you react to how it ends.
Cool.
So I won't say much more than that.
All right.
On my side, I've been seeing, let's see. So the big ones that I want to go ahead and preach about, Blackout is a nice, like, old school werewolf movie. It's almost like The Wolfman,
okay,
but it's even, like, it's like really low budget. It's a Larry Fessenden movie. Larry Fessenden makes super independent films. Not a lot of stars in his movies, and he usually will take, like, a universal monster and then frame it through some other idea, so there's some other social commentary. So, like, for example, in this case, he's doing the Wolfman through, like, government corruption.
Oh, that's interesting.
By big business.
Okay.
And there's some really interesting stuff going on in that one. So that's one that, when it comes out, it's called Blackout.
Okay.
I think people will really like that one.
How does the low budget when it comes to werewolf? Because werewolf transformations are generally really difficult to do well, right?
So when we see the werewolf transformations, that's where, like, probably, like, 90% of the budget is coming in. It feels like. The good aesthetics on that front.
Good.
A lot of shots from the point of view of the werewolf, so that we see more, like, POV from his lens, instead of forcing us to, like, do too much. And then a lot of shots from, like, just out with him, like, kind of out of frame. So you'll see, like, the werewolf claw, like, clearly in frame, but you won't see the rest of the body. So they can, like, when he actually transforms, I think it's probably one of the better actual Wolfmans that I've seen in recent memory, because it's all practical. Where I just think a lot of the other stuff that I've seen is so CG driven, and I just don't respond to it
with
the CG stuff. So
fascinating.
I think that's the advantage that it has. I would then point people to, when it eventually comes out, Where the Devil Roams, which is the latest movie from the Addams Family. Do you know about the Addams Family, Ryan?
I know of them, right?
Okay, so not the like Wednesday, like, snap.
No, I do not.
Right. So it's basically a family of who make their own movies.
Oh, interesting.
The dad's name is John Adams.
Okay.
The daughter's name is Zelda Adams. And the third person is Toby Posner, who is part of their, like, collective. And so the three of them together direct the movies, write the movies, star in the movies.
Wow,
and
that's cool.
They made Hellbender 2 years ago. Was a pretty decent one on Shudder. It was, like, one of the highest rated horror movies of that year.
Wow, that's cool.
And then this one, Where the Devil Roams, is, like, almost like a 1920s, again, you and I have conjured this, like a 1920s Dust Bowl horror film about a family that works on the carnival circuit and then murders people in between their carnival stops. Definitely a very interesting movie in that front. Yeah. And the last one I definitely want to shout out, there's a combo. It's called Birth Rebirth. And then the second one is called It Lives Inside. They're both very interesting little horror films. I would say Birth Rebirth has slightly more dramatic elements, but definitely has, like, zombie and Frankenstein tropes in it. And then It Lives Inside is, like, a genie monster movie. The reason you definitely want to be checking out the stuff that's coming out of Fantasia is because that's where Skidamarink premiered. That's where Hellbender premiered.
Okay.
So these movies will catch on with the horror crowd. So just keep an eye on the festival.
Cool.
They've got a lot of interesting stuff coming out this year.
Nice.
All right. And then the one last thing I want to touch on while we're still here, for our HHN fans who have caught on after our breakdown of last episode, we've got just a little bit of cleaning up to do on more information that came out after we actually recorded. So I want to make sure that people don't think that we're crazy or ridiculous or have no idea what's going on. All right. So the first thing that I think we want to address is Dueling Dragons, Choose Thy Fate.
Mm-hmm.
So Ryan has not heard a lot of this. So we wanted to make sure that he's hearing this for the first time. So you're getting his live reaction.
I'm right there with you.
Yes. So in theory, what is going to be happening during the house is that we're going to walk in after Merlin has been turned into like the giant tree. And they're the two warlocks, Blizzrock and Pyrock, which were the fire and ice dragons, are trying to fight for control. And then at the end, after we like go through a forest and we get to the castle, they reach the spell book, and it turns out Merlin put a spell on the book, and then we split paths. And then you either choose fire or ice, and then apparently each night or every hour or whatever, the winner changes on each side.
Oh, wow.
So there are potentially four different endings for this. Yeah. So that's exciting. Wow.
Yeah,
that's kind of cool. That's really exciting.
I don't even know if I'll be able to do all four.
Yeah, we're going to force it. We're going to force it. Ryan.
We're going to try real hard. Over,
say. So that's super, super exciting. Yeah. The next one's going to be Blood Moon. We talked a lot about it being a witch's house. That does not appear to be the case. In fact, on the Universal podcast that they dropped with all the house stuff, they mentioned a lot about a blood cult.
Yeah.
So this is more just going to be like, this is, you mentioned Chupacabra at the time. That sounds extremely likely. That's what it's like. Basically, the villagers are like, oh, everything's bad. We've already killed all these other people. Well, you're next.
Yeah.
And they're trying to murder us to be their Blood Moon offerings.
Yeah. So I listened to the podcast, which was really cool. And then they had a follow-up podcast, which was like a narrative. Did you listen to the narrative one too?
I have not listened to the narrative one.
Oh, dude, it's really cool. It breaks down like this vampire woman part of the coven that like ends up doing 69 and no vampire vamp 69. So
not okay.
So
Ryan, I'm so glad we have an explicit rating on this podcast.
Yeah, I know. So anyway, so she goes in and is talking about how she's been trying to track down Dr. Oddfellow for like her entire vampire life. And she is constantly running into him, and she didn't make all the connections until it was too late, basically. And it kind of sounds like they're creating this new potential vampire as this Ostoff, the vampire head.
Yes.
Which is interesting to see what they do with that.
Well, so from what we've heard is that it sounds like he's going to be involved in something with Oddfellow during that section of the park. So we may like see him get sacrificed by Oddfellow.
Nice.
So that'll be interesting. As far as other house info goes, so we were mostly dead on the money that we thought it sounded like Chucky was not just going to be the show. That indeed is not going to be the case. It's going to be way more meta than that.
Yeah. They're talking about that was super fucking cool.
Yeah, so you heard the same thing where it's basically like they invited Chucky to check out his house and he's like, this sucks, I'm taking it over.
So yeah, we listened to that. Cool. They were like, yeah, we're gonna make it about the show, and he was like, no, it's the best of all my kills.
So that's exciting, which also means more homework for us because we have to watch all the Chucky movies. Or I will, anyway.
I'll leave that to AJ.
All right. So speaking of Chucky stuff, he's also getting the bar over at Cabana Bay. It's going to be called Chucky's Twisted Playground. That's going to be the one that you have to be staying at the resort to go to. So I don't think we're going to do that. But for those of you who are staying at the resort, make sure you go out and check it out. There's simultaneously going to be another bar called the Spooky Swizzle Lounge that is going to be like a Little Boo themed little bar. So that's exciting.
Where's that at?
That's also at Cabana Bay. Now I'm not sure if that one's going to be a Cabana Bay exclusive, but we'll be swinging by Cabana Bay regardless.
Cool.
Because there is going to be the Monsters Gallery of Legends.
Ooh.
So there's basically going to be photo ops for every single one of the Universal Monsters at each of the resorts. So it's
Rachel will be joining us for that part.
Yes, I assume. And then that just means it'll be like a scavenger hunt where we go to each of the resorts and find the thing and get the pictures. So that'll be fun. And if there's a bar element, that'll be cool. And then there's also apparently the Spooky Sunset Lounge is going to be at the Universal Endless Summer Resort. I don't know necessarily what that's going to be, but it just seems like it's going to be like pineapple drinks and jack-o'-lanterns. So,
cool. That's kind of cool.
Yeah. And the last thing is, in addition to Dead Coconut Club being reopened, which they confirmed, there's going to be something called the Halloween, the Peacock Halloween Bar. So over in San Francisco, next to Lombard's, there is a bar. And this is going to be sponsored by Peacock, the streaming service this year.
Yes, yes.
So
just like dead peacocks roaming the bar.
I don't think that's going to be the case. I don't think they're going to be like this. Our streaming service is dead. They'll be a little too on the nose.
Right.
Considering they're like the smallest streaming service anyway. But what I have heard is that the rumor is that there's going to be David S. Pumpkins from the SNL sketch as one of the photo ops in that area.
That's amazing. That would
be interesting. if that's what they're going to do and use it to like do like other Halloween-y things in this little bar, that'll be interesting. Like, it may not
that's
be
actually a great play, idea.
But right?
Yeah. It'll be like actually a great idea. Like, if they're going to make it Peacock, like make it like spooky Peacock shows. That would make more sense instead of just flat out branding. Like, you know, like they do with like NFL stadiums or it's like Hard Rock Stadium. Like,
yes, you know exactly. What I mean?
So that would be cool though. I'd like that to like, it's like active branding where it's like, yeah, like we want to put out Peacock, but we're actually going to be creative about it. Like,
right. Exactly. And that also ties into the whole, like, Universal has a lot of other properties that don't necessarily fit in cleanly to HHN.
Right.
Unless you do something like this.
Exactly. That'd be cool.
So like, it would be interesting to see what else they pull out of their vaults for this, because I'm trying to think of other like Halloween stuff. Like, do they have like somebody dressed up as like Dwight Schrute as a character, as one of his costumes, or do they have
Jim with like the hole punch?
Yeah, exactly, right? Like I'm just curious to see if that is what they're doing. Sure. It'd be funny to see what else they do.
That's interesting.
Yep. I mean, at worst it'll be like a little activation bar and it'll be a nice distraction. Especially as they're taking away, considering how much, if we do indeed have the Megan Horde, and it seems extremely likely that the Death Eaters are confirmed at this point because they're setting up like extra crates and stuff for people to hide behind in Harry Potter.
That's awesome. That's so cool.
Yeah.
So I think here's my thing is like the demise of J.K. Rowling, like allowing them to mess with the Harry Potter property. Like, what is going on with that? Like,
maybe. I mean, I think that they've now done it enough in Japan.
Yeah.
And they did it last year out in California. Mm. And then even last year, you and I could have gone over, we just didn't, over to Hogsmeade. And they had like Death Eaters walking around being spooky ish.
That's cool.
In Hogsmeade at Islands of Adventure.
That's awesome. So,
that's just bring really it into the actual event now.
Nice. I love that.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be an official announcement. It can just be like an atmosphere thing.
Yeah, I would love that. That's so cool.
Yep. Okay, so that's basically the catch-up that I've heard this week. I'm sure there's other stuff by the time that this has been posted that you guys might have heard. So just keep an eye to the ear to the ground for more HHN news. We'll try to cover it as it comes.
Cool.
Do you have anything else you want to talk about, Ryan?
Do we do the awards for New Blood?
Oh my God, we never did the awards.
Yeah.
Oh geez, great call. Okay. Well, let's go back and do some awards real quick. Best kill. There's only a couple actual kills.
Yeah.
In the context of the movie.
Can we like add the? See, that's the thing is like Riley, I feel like, should win a couple awards, but he didn't actually die.
Okay, so how about this? Okay, so best kill is Duckett, because he's the guy who stabs himself in the face and he dies.
Yeah, that is
like a good that kill. We know. Like, yeah. like it's either that or Mia throws herself in front of a
yeah, that's pretty much her only like two kills. Yeah.
So, but I think that the Duckett one is like actually upsetting anyway.
Yeah.
So I think that counts as our best kill.
Yep.
I think the Riley stuff mostly falls under best effect. And scared as shit moment, right?
Yeah.
Because I would argue that the first time he gets possessed and starts slamming his head into the table,
yeah,
that
definitely was the scariest the
moment of the entire moment of the movie.
Yeah, I think that's the scariest. I don't know. I would say for scariest though would be the scariest shit moment would be the hell scene. It's pretty fucking
scary.
That's
a good point. That's a good point.
So we can give the Riley eye gouge, because I think that's the fucking coolest
for the effect. Best effect of the movie.
Yes. Yeah, the Tom Savini award, and then the scariest shit moment would be the hell scene.
All right, I like it. I like
okay.
it.
Yeah.
Most overconfident character in the movie is Jade.
Yes, right? She's nothing is gonna happen. This is stupid.
yeah, that definitely did not go her way.
Yeah.
So especially with her brother, especially with the fact that her boyfriend got his toe sucked on. Everything.
That's everything... true. Like her whole fucking world collapsed on her.
Yeah. Yeah, she had a real rough go of things. I would then argue the Gone Too Soon award. I think that probably goes to the dad.
Yeah. The dad. He has no part. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, he doesn't really have a lot to do in the movie. Yeah. And I think the bigger, sadder thing is that, like, I don't know, maybe he left just in time, because if his world after this movie is him by himself, his wife has died, and also his daughter, like, threw herself in front of a car. Like that's a rough one. Maybe he did leave. Yeah, that's a rough
life to keep going. I said Riley didn't die, but I feel like Gone Too Soon in an interesting way is Riley, though, right? Like, because that was an interesting little character. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, I think I've got the actual Gone Too Soon though.
Okay,
the little girl. The implication.
Oh yes,
the implication of the little girl having been possessed and died.
Yes.
At the hands of this stuff, I think that's the Gone Too Soon.
That's Gone Too Soon. Yeah, she's like six. Like,
yeah, it was upsetting.
Yeah. Oh god.
Yeah, all right. Dude,
they did a good job making her just creepy enough without like giving her like major wounds or anything.
Yes, but it was still creepy as shit. I would then argue who wins the movie is pretty straightforward. I assume that would be the Philippou brothers, the Rocka Rocka duo, because.
Yep.
They clearly have a career after this, no matter what. Now, the thing is, the person who also has to be in consideration for that is Sophie Wilde as Mia.
Yeah, no, I agree.
I think the three of them almost have to share it, because whatever she does next is going to be like really interesting. Mm-hmm. But like they're already off to the races.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they've already filmed the prequel and then they're in talks for Street Fighter for a relaunch of that. And that's like their action.
That
like,
fits them, yeah, right?
Yeah. Like, so they're already off of the races. So I would almost argue that like Sophie Wilde is like the performance that holds this whole thing together. Mm. But it is their vision ultimately that pushes us in to like really understand like what this movie's trying to do and how ambitious it is.
Right. No, I agree with that. I agree.
Is there a most annoying character in this movie? Is there anybody who
the Corey Award? I don't know. Unlike Terrifier 2, I thought the mom did a really good job of portraying like a mom.
The mom played by Miranda Otto, who is probably most famous to people for playing Eowyn in Lord of the Rings. She's the one who stabs the dude in the face and goes like, "I am no man," and stabs the Witch King in the face with a sword.
Dope.
Like, Miranda Otto has had a long career as like a badass. She's also one of the sisters in the Sabrina TV show. She's one of the witches.
Okay.
So you know, Miranda Otto is awesome, and so her popping in here definitely lent some credibility to the movie before I saw it, if I'm being honest.
No, she did it such a great. She was what the Terrifier mom should have been, right?
Yes, Terrifier 2 mom.
I'm like trying to think if they're. Go ahead.
She also cuts off Mia from the family.
Right.
She's like, "You have to leave. You are the problem that my family is facing right now."
Right. Which is very, like, very mom of, especially if you look at the drug allegory.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like, she's trying to, she doesn't want to enable, she doesn't want a kid around that. And then,
well, and to her, she doesn't understand that there's, like, a psychiatric, like weird shit going on with the ghost. Right. Exactly. To her, it is just a drug problem, and she is taking the steps to get her
kids away
family out of that. Yeah.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
I guess the only one that's like kind of like the Corey Award, and I don't blame the dad, but like Max, the dad, like why would he hide the suit? I mean, I get it, but like I get why he hides it, but you know, I think so. If anyone gets the Corey in my mind, maybe Max, but like I think anyone in this movie was like awful.
I mean, the boyfriend's maybe a little clueless.
Sure.
Like in terms of like he should have known better to not.
Oh, wait, I know who it should be. You know, not Haley, but the other guy, the other like bully popular guy.
Oh, I don't dislike him though.
Oh, he's such a like jockey, douchey dude. Like,
fair enough.
All right.
How about we skipped over this one, the Norman Bates moment of the movie? I think first time we see somebody change.
Yeah.
I think that it's like.
When it's not just on social media, we know it's not a filter. Like, yes. This is, like, for real.
Yeah, like, I think that's clearly it. And then, yeah, I guess Mandy Award. I think this is going to be the Rocka Rocka Mandy Award, because no matter what they kind of do from here, they're still going to be the Talk To Me guys.
Right. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, it's going to be hard to knock this off, especially within the horror community, right? Like, if they do Street Fighter, right? Like, I don't know if they're ever going to just surpass that.
It's a good point.
See, icon feedback, do you have anything?
I mean, right now it's saying like a 96% Rotten Tomatoes. Ooh. It's definitely got a lot of like huge critical response from that. I think people just in general love the fact that it's like very much, let's see. So, I mean, Joe Blow website, they said Cass is terrific with Wild appealing as the heroine. However, Joe Bird is the best, delivering the best possessed performance since Linda Blair in The Exorcist. Wow. Which... I see that. Sure. I do see that. I also think that we got some very good ones in Evil Dead this year. Yeah. So I have trouble saying it's the best since then.
Sure.
But yeah, no, I think that just in general, this movie has just a lot going for it. So I don't know if that we can give it icon feedback yet until
it's been
a few years. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, most of the like the smaller reviews are in the same boat that it was like overhyped watching it type of thing, which I totally can see that because that's how I went in. I was like, yo, this is going to be the scariest movie that ever exists.
So you know what's funny is I actually went in the opposite, just so you know, because we never talked about this.
Sure.
I went to South by Southwest with a friend who had done Sundance and he saw Talk To Me there and he did not like it. He's like one of the big detractors of the movie.
Really?
Like says it's like one of the worst movies of the year.
Oh, I don't know about that.
And like, so I went into it.
Has he seen the new Insidious movie? Like
he had not at the time. Sure. But when I went to go see it, he was like, "Oh, you're going to the wrong movie. You should see." It was Late Night with the Devil was the other one playing against it. Oh. And I was like, "Yeah, I want to see it, but I also really want to see Talk To Me."
Right.
Like I know that you don't like it, but like this sounds like something that's up my alley. And then I had heard on the big picture the. Sean Fantasy of that website said this movie fucking rules. Mm. And so like I had two very differing opinions in my ear going into the movie. And so yeah, I was happy with what I got, obviously.
Yeah.
But I did have the idea that I'm like, maybe it's gonna be too derivative or it's gonna be interesting to me. And now months later, I'm like, this movie fucking rules.
Sure. That's interesting.
Yep.
Yeah. So we'll see. I mean, we'll see what happens when it comes to that. But I think you're right. I think it just came out. So it's like hard to have icon feedback. But
yep.
And the last one is who won the movie?
Oh, and we said the Rocka Rocka guys, right? The Philippus.
Yeah. So the Philippus definitely won the movie. Mm-hmm. All right. I think we went through all the awards there.
Yep. All right. Cool. So if you guys have any questions for us, go ahead and hit us up. You can email me at alan.french@sunshinestatecineplex. That's also where you're going to find a lot of my writing. So if you want to follow up on what I'm seeing at Fantasia. If you want to see me trash the movie Cobwebs, which apparently I am the one of the lone dissenting voices on that movie, go ahead and check that out.
Sure.
That movie is derivative as shit, by the way.
Okay.
I think it has one brilliant sequence that is like among the best horror moments of the entire year. Oh. And I think the rest of the movie is so predictable that I just like cannot get over it.
So it's like a YouTube short movie is what it should have been.
Almost. I just think that it's trying to pull too much from other movies that are just better.
Ah, interesting.
Yep. It's a shame because it has a lot of really good performances in it. It's just, I I was like, yeah, I've seen this in blankety blankety blank other movies.
Yeah.
Like,
that's so interesting.
But I do know that there's this might be our Terrifier this year, where like hardcore fans are like, this movie fucking rules. And I'm just like, I don't get it.
That's so fascinating.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see. Well, yeah, you can catch me at Keep It Spooky 09 on pretty much everything. So
yes, definitely check us out on Instagram. We're trying to be much more active there. I feel like we are being much more active there.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's where you'll also see when we post new episodes, we'll announce it there. We'll link it in our stories and stuff. So you can just go ahead and click there and then boom, you have a new episode on your feed. And you could also rate and subscribe. We don't really ask for that very often.
Yeah.
So, but since we've actually started to get a decent sized audience, we would like some of that feedback.
Yeah.
So if there's something we could do better, let us know.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
All right.
All right, y'all.
I'm AJ.
Spooky. Oh, I'm Spooky Ryan. Keep it spooky.
Peace.